Welcome to the Lavo Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Ma Prem Vasumathin. Vasumathin holds a degree in psychology and is one of the original Osho therapists, specializing in codependency, relationships, and tantra. Vasumathin took sannyas in 1976 and her work is based on the interface between psychotherapy, spirituality, and meditation. I'm so happy to have Vasumathin on the show and I hope you enjoy it. Vasumathin, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good, Swaram. Thank you. I'm very happy to be here. I've been looking forward to this.
Amazing. Okay, so to start, tell us a little bit about how you came across Osho.
Okay. It was 1973 or 74, and I was studying psychology in London, and I heard about a man called Somendra. He was Michael Barnett at that time. And he was doing a training group. So I went along to meet him and I found him absolutely amazing. And I joined the group. And there was a guy there who had an acupuncturist called Shyam Singer. And Shyam Singer was working out of a little office in Bell Street. But it was also, what I didn't know, an Osho meditation center. So he said to me, you know, for your development, you should do dynamic meditation. So I went down into this little meditation room and there was a pair of Osho sandals. And after the first dynamic, I found myself falling on the sandals with my head on the shoes and crying. I didn't know why. I didn't understand. But it was my first sense of Osho's energy. And I regularly did dynamic. And then a year later, people started to come back from India. The first disciples I met, dressed in the orange and wearing the malas, and I felt really attracted. But still, I didn't feel like it was my time. I was a student. I wanted to become a really, you know, well-trained therapist. And then a strange thing happened. One night I was in my flat in London. And in those days, you needed to put coins into the electric meter to make it work. And one day, the electric meter suddenly switched off. There was coins in it. There was money in it. I didn't understand what happened. And then I saw a pair of eyes looking at me. And I looked at those eyes and I said, I know those eyes. Whose eyes are they? And suddenly the voice came, it's your eyes. It's your real eyes. That's interesting. A few hours later, I heard a beautiful voice. I said, whose voice is that? I know that voice. The answer came back, it's your real voice. It's you. That's really interesting. It was so clear. And then the next morning I woke up and the sun was a bright orange. And then I said, okay, Osho, you've reached. I'm coming. That was early in 76. And I was still in this group with Somendra. And in the July of that year, he gave me sannyas. So I didn't actually take sannyas directly from Osho. But in the November of 76, I went to Pune with Anisha. We took the same flight. We went to the same first darshan. And the minute he walked out of Chuang Te Zu into the auditorium, I took one look at him and there was just this incredible sense of completion. Like I knew my life had come to a point which it was always destined to become. And in that moment, I felt I've arrived. I'm completely home. I hadn't even talked to him. Just to see him was this amazing feeling of I am finally home. And I never had that in my life before. I always traveled. You know, I didn't have a sense of ever belonging. But in that moment, I am completely home. This is where I should be. And this is where I am. And this is a total sense of perfection. So that was arriving to Osho.
You mentioned that you were studying psychology and then you were called by Osho, essentially. And you have been a therapist now for over 30 years.
Yeah.
And whilst...
Oh, more, no, it's more than 40 years.
Oh, there you go.
I was 24. I'm 68 now. Long time.
Oh, you look much younger.
Oh, thank you.
So, whilst I was preparing this interview, I checked your website and I came across a sentence that really caught my attention. You say on your website, I learned that therapy is an integral part of meditation and meditation is an integral part of therapy. This intersection between therapy and meditation is a real crucial part of Osho's work. So I'd really love to hear from you, who obviously have a lot of experience both in therapy and meditation. You're an Osho sannyasin. If you can kind of expand and elaborate a little bit more on that statement.
Yeah, well, I think all the Osho therapists would say that our whole work, I think it is Osho therapies, not just me. All Osho therapists come from this perspective that therapy leads, is the doorway to meditation. It's not therapy as an end in itself. And Osho said it very clearly, therapy clears the mind, but it's meditation that brings your mind to rest at home. So therapy is a preparation, and Osho was really, really clear about that. And I think most of us still work from that perspective. But the way that I got into therapy with Osho was very interesting because it really shaped the way I understand therapy and the way I work with people. And it was an interesting story. I was living with Anisha, again, Anisha. She must listen to this. And she got hepatitis and she was supposed to lead a group. And she was really a trained therapist. I wasn't at that time. And for some reason, I don't know how it happened, I was asked to take over her group. And at that time, there were people coming to Pune from Esalen, you know, Dick Price. These were the people who were extremely influential in the human potential movement. They had started the Esalen Center, and they had started to come to Osho, and they were in the group. I had never led a group before. So I asked Osho, can you tell me what must I do? And he said, oh, it's really easy. He said, I'm leading the group. You're just in the room. I said, so tell me more. He said, well, all you need to do is be present. I'm actually leading the group. But he said, if it's a bad group, it's my group, so you don't have to worry. But if it's a good group, it's also my group. So, ha, all you have to do is be present. And I went into that group, and I don't think I've ever been so present in my life because I couldn't rely on my skill or my knowledge. I just had to really see that I'm only a channel. I cannot have an ego identification with what I do and what happens. I cannot be identified with I'm doing a good job or the outcome is great. And I could not take credit for anything. All I could be was a vessel, a medium, a channel. And that was a very profound teaching, and it's never left me. It's really never left me that whenever I work, it's really him, it's existence, it's something bigger than me. And so that brings up a space of trust and relaxation. I can't say I'm always in trust and relaxation. Of course, I have an ego and I get afraid. But it never left me as a ground from which I understood therapy. So it isn't only therapy is meditation. It was being present. It was a way of being fully, fully present. And that was for me what meditation was. I wasn't sitting silently somewhere. I was simply absolutely present. So that was the start of it. And then he gave me many things to do. And it was always a sense of I'm in his service. I'm in the service of something greater than myself. This isn't just about me. So I think that's really come into my understanding of therapy. And I'm sure it's the same for many Osho therapists. It was a space of letting go, letting be, and seeing where the whole wanted this to go, not what is my idea. And that was it's a very profound teaching, and I valued it incredibly. I don't know if it makes any sense what I'm saying.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. I think that's one of the essential messages of Osho, to let go, to trust. And it's beautiful to hear how he was taking responsibility also to make you feel completely, to just let go and trust. You know, if it's good, it's me. If it's not good, it's me.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I mean, later, of course, I learned things. I didn't feel like it's only a space of trust because I realized to be a really good therapist, you have to have knowledge, you have to have skill, you have to have a theoretical background, you have to have an understanding of meditation, and you have to see how the mind works. And Osho said two things again that always stayed with me. He talked about repression and being unconscious. And, you know, that's a thing that we all work with, because most of us come into therapy with a tremendous amount of repression, with a tremendous amount of psychological material that's unavailable to our awareness, and simply act out from unconscious places, creating all kinds of sabotage and all kinds of mess in our lives. And slowly, slowly, part of the work of awareness, getting ready for meditation, is to get to know your unconscious material, to begin to have a connection with yourself, be able to understand your own ego structure, your own psychological dynamics. And then with awareness, you know, meditation isn't just suddenly you sit in silence. It's that you work with your repressed material. You get to know your unconscious. And meditation helps you to know your unconscious. I mean, I think that's why dynamic was so powerful and is still so powerful. It's not something I love anymore because my body doesn't love it, but I love it as a method, because how quickly people accessed their pain, their rage, their guilt, their shame, all these things that create a buffer to your energy and make meditation much more difficult. Because if you're sitting on a mountain of repressed material and you're consciously trying to keep this from becoming conscious, of course, you're going to be in tension and a big chunk of your energy is not available for simply being still. You cannot be still, because every time you're still, then this unconscious material threatens to overwhelm you. And then you just want to switch off. You want to dissociate. You want to distract yourself. So I think two other things that Osho said was repression and the unconscious. And then one time people said to him, when are we going to stop emotional release? And he said, you're not, because you've got so much stuff. Western people come with so much toxic load of repressed emotions. So, you know, in the early days, the expressive therapies always preceded the awareness therapies, unless people didn't really need them. So Osho was very scientific in the way that he understood the Western mind and what the Western mind needed. So that I think.
There would be ever a point where you finish off with expression and catharsis, or, you know, where do you draw a line where, you know, you stop doing the catharsis and you start meditating?
I think that does happen. I think there's a time for catharsis, and then there's a time for inward processing, where your awareness does a sort of inquiry, where you can look at yourself objectively, you can look at yourself with understanding, and you can process your inner material. You have awareness. It's really about awareness. And then if you want to do catharsis, you can, but it's also about taking responsibility. At a certain point, it's responsibility for your whole energy, for the way you behave, for the way that you are either aware or unaware, and for how you use your energy. You have a sense of sensitivity to yourself, of inner self-understanding. So I think catharsis is really, really good in the beginning. Sometimes it's great to do because we still build up tension and we still need to release, but it isn't essential for meditation later on in the journey. Then there is more capacity and more joy and more ability to simply move inside and find some inner space, find some quiet, find some emptiness, find some peace, and find some rest. I know that's my meditation now. I love to just move into internal and sit quietly. I don't need to scream and yell. My body likes to shake, so I still find Kundalini would be my meditation of choice. It still always works for me.
Well, now that makes a lot of sense. And I think, you know, you touched already upon some of the points that constitute the next question. And I hope I don't put you on the spot here, but I'm very curious to hear what you think about that. So the way I understand, I mean, Osho is possibly the most lucid critic of psychology and therapy. You know, he was very clear in exposing the limitation of all the therapies. You know, he was making jokes of Freud, Jung, Adler, and all the rest. And also on a theoretical level, he was saying that, you know, psychology has big limitations. But at the same time, he used it a lot. He introduced therapy and these techniques. So,
well, he was more than just techniques. He himself was very psychological. I mean, when he would take somebody apart, he would deconstruct them psychologically as well. I mean, maybe he criticized the founders of psychotherapy, but Osho was also very deeply insightful and psychological, which was part of his brilliance and wisdom, is that, you know, he could see into the human mind. He could see our fears. He could see our subterfuge. He could see our compensations. He could see all the ego games, our jealousies, our pettiness, everything, our power issues. I mean, power issues was one of the biggest things that we had to deal with in all of our times in different aspects, different eras of the work through the communes and through the ashram to the ranch. Power issues were a very, very big thing. And Osho looked at these psychological issues deeply. He looked at our dark sides. He looked at our light sides. I think that was the attraction to Osho for many, many intellectual type of people. You know, it wasn't just a feel-good experience. Osho deconstructed our minds, our emotions, our feelings, our psychology with such utter honesty and brilliance and a level of insight that is just hard to fathom. I mean, you know, Osho was a master. Let's say he saw everything. He could see through everything. He could see through all the masks. So yes, he may have said jokingly things about the psychologists because, of course, they did not move into meditation. Very few of them did. But he definitely acknowledged their work, and he himself, I would have said, was a master psychologist. He was a master in all levels. And the way that he employed and used the therapies, he could sit with one person and he could see they needed to do this, this, and this. And how did he know that? You know, that's the level of mastery. He knew intimately each person's needs, each person's limitations, and he could guide you according to what he saw. There was no one size fits all.
That's great. I never thought of Osho as a master psychologist.
Oh, yes, you know? Absolutely. No doubt about it. He understood relationships. I mean, Osho's work on relationships was hundreds of years before his time. Not only was he a master psychologist, he's a visionary. He could see the way that we were relating, which was so, it was undeveloped. It was somehow still holding to old structures because, you know, we have attachments. And relationship was one of the fields that he worked on us the most to bring relationships to consciousness. We heard it, you know, no possessiveness, no jealousy. So many of us failed dismally, including myself in that department. However, even if we failed, he instilled a vision of understanding human relationships, human attachments, love and sex, which is, you know, where everybody falls apart, where awareness tends to abandon us very easily. He understood it so compassionately and gave us maps, gave us blueprints, gave us so many ways to look at it and to live it in a new way. I mean, this was just revolutionary. Osho was a revolution, an inward revolution, an outward revolution. And also the way we were in the communities, you know, the Buddha field, the Sangha, relationship wasn't only personal. It was losing your ego identity by working in a communal setting. And, you know, any of us who worked in any of the time of Pune 1 and the ranch and even Pune 2, you know, you were constantly confronted. The master confronts your ego with every type of interaction and every type of situation. And nothing was ever the same. Nothing was predictable. Always something new would come. Always something would come. And you liked it or you didn't like it. But there was a level of confronting your resistance and sometimes managing to surrender, sometimes not. But your ego was constantly being mirrored. And this was the, you know, the brilliance and the wonderfulness of being with Osho.
You once asked Osho a beautiful question about relationship and interdependence. And the question is actually published on Osho News. And I'll link that on the show notes. And for many sannyasins, it may take years to grasp the meaning of Osho's answers. So I'm wondering if you got it and if your understanding of that answer has evolved during the years.
I think it has. I mean, look, I'm a relationship person, which is secret why I work with relationships. It's been a subject of fascination for me since I was very, very young, partly because that was the place where I grew. You know, he called me a prem, so I wasn't someone who was only going to grow in meditation. Relationship has been my sadhana, has been my fire. And believe me, I've gone astray many, many, many times. But I do feel that I always asked my questions. I exposed pretty much where I was. And I got the help I needed, also in private letters I wrote to him. I tried to understand, what is this thing called relationship? Why are we so attracted to it? And why is it a place where it's so easy to get lost, to make compromises, to go unconscious? And I really felt this is a lifetime which I want to know how you can use relationship as a place of transformation. Because, you know, we are humans. We are intimate creatures. We are not meant to be alone. So how can we use this drive we have for human bonding wisely? And that question that I asked, he gave me a wonderful answer, but basically he was saying, it's not about dependence and it's not about independence, which is where we all get lost. You're either avoidant of relationships or you're over-attached to it, and both are wrong. There's a more enlightened view, and that is of interdependence, where you retain your autonomy, but you're still open for profound depth of connection. And, you know, this is still something I'm working on. But it was such a wonderful answer and such a, it's almost like he set my path. Not that in the early years I really managed to achieve it, but with some more equanimity, because it does require equanimity. It requires some kind of inner space. I did manage to come to a deeper realization of what that actually meant. And how to describe interdependence. It's that you relate with a different view in mind. It's almost like what they call now in the modern psychology, triangulation, where you have you and you have another person, but you're not focused on each other. You're focused on the universal, that both of you triangulate. The point of the relationship is not each other, but is to access a deeper level of consciousness through the levels of interaction, through mirroring each other, through seeing yourself reflected in the other, through noticing where your defenses and your reactions come in, and using the relationship to grow, literally using it as a place of growth and of healing. So that's how I interpreted it. I mean, I still think it's a beautiful question, still think it's an amazing answer. And I was very young at the time. I asked that question. It's very interesting, the timing of that. The day before he started working with mediums, it was early February, it's 70, I don't remember. But it was straight after that that he started to call people into darshan, to work as mediums, which was a great learning for me, because I was part of that, probably one of the earliest. And that was very powerful. That whole experience was really powerful, because through being so intimate with Osho, you got glimpses of a reality that was much vaster and much more non-dualistic than anything that I knew. And it was a convergence of asking that question and being closer to his energy, which, you know, not much you can say about it. It was just incredibly mind-blowing.
Going a little bit deeper on this, if you were to pin down the essence of what you learned from Osho that helped you understand this whole dimension of relationship, what would that be?
Well, I wouldn't say that it was in the past. I would say it's completely ongoing. I mean, what I am learning from Osho, it's never finished. I mean, Osho was so vast. He brought in so much. So all I would say is, I still learn from Osho. I learn from Osho all the time. You know, Osho is still my inspiration. It's still, well, Osho's my master. So it's my guide. It's the place where I go to for relevance. And I feel very emotional, actually, as I talk about this. It never ends with Osho. I mean, Osho is long gone in the body, and it's not about the physical form. It's about the space that Osho transmitted. And, you know, Osho's teachings are so vast, I don't think in four lifetimes I'd be able to absorb it all. So you take little bits, you know. Right now I'm busy with Tantra. I'm really going back over the Tantra teachings, and I am so blown away by them. And they're so relevant. So it's like a new love affair that renews itself again and again. And even if sometimes it sort of goes dormant, it always comes back. So what am I learning from Osho? I'm learning from Osho how to live my life. What is it I value? And I'm learning from Osho, especially in these times of corona, that meditation is the most important thing. What else do we have? There's so much death around. There's so much fear. There's so much uncertainty. There's so much impermanence. Whatever we thought we were going to do in a year, we don't know. We don't know anything. What is going to happen? So, you know, I could freak out, and at times I really do. But also there's a deeper knowing of here's where the teaching really comes in, to come back to oneself, to meditate, to see what are the real values, what is most important, and to affirm those values in the way we live. And what's been really interesting is it's simplified life. It's brought my spiritual life into a greater focus. And I'm actually very grateful for that. And so I feel that, what did Osho teach? He taught awareness. He taught meditation, ultimately. It was that simple. He taught witnessing, learning to observe your body, your mind, your emotions, not getting so attached, not getting so identified. This is what we most need right now. Certainly what I most need right now, because I have no certainty what's going to happen. So this is what feels the most relevant. And also what feels beautiful is Osho created a global community. And this Sangha, even if it's now only digital, is so very precious. And it's so very precious to me to have these people all over the world that we feel connected to. I don't know if that answers it, but basically I'm saying Osho is not finite. The lessons are not finite. They're constantly ongoing. They get deeper. They get richer.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I love this idea of the Sangha. The Osho Sangha is beautiful. Even though the physical place at the moment, but we still connect and we're still united by the love of Osho. And I clearly feel it from you. And also, yeah, just a little comment on the way sannyasins are facing this coronavirus crisis. I must say that among all the people I talk to, I just want to talk to sannyasin now, because the others are all freaking out. And sannyasin also may freak out here and there, but they are as if more prepared to face this situation.
Yeah, I mean, Osho taught us everything. He taught about life. He taught about love. He taught about death. He taught about impermanence. And it's all in our face right now. And yes, the community is a wonderful support. But, you know, I would be dishonest if I said at times I didn't freak out. I do freak out. Yesterday was a day of very big fear, because I started to really feel the enormousness of this thing and the enormous unknown of it. And the fact that, you know, it's going to change our lives for quite a while to come. And, you know, maybe nothing goes back to what it was. So that is, you know, first of all, I had a lot of freak out, but then I could get quiet again. So it's work. I have to work through moments of fear. I have to work at it at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. We all do. I have the same. You know, there are moments. But overall, I think I'm doing quite well at the moment.
Yes, good. Good. And I love what you do. You know, these podcasts, they very much unite the community. And, you know, the community means so much to me now.
That's beautiful. And the same is for me. Like, I started the podcast because I miss the community. I was kind of isolated in Singapore. There are no sannyasin there. And I really felt this need. I was going mad. You know, unless if I have no access to sannyasins, even if it's just a chat on Skype, I go crazy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And even when we meet on Skype, I'm actually amazed at how quickly we can come to a place of depth or humor. You know, I talk to my friends and it's delightful. We laugh, we talk. I feel the love. You feel the love. You feel that we shared something so incredible. We are really intimate. We are really friends for life.
Well, that's so nice. I mean, I haven't met you. I mean, we are speaking half an hour and I already feel like so connected. And it's true and it's happening and we're not faking. So it's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the other thing about Osho. He was all for being honest. He was like, the truth is the thing. Truth will liberate. And I think that's another thing I really got, is Osho wasn't into games. He wasn't into ego games. He saw right through them. And I think one of the things we carry is a sense of needing to be deeply honest with ourselves and with others.
Going back to the questions, I understand that your field of passion is clearly working to spread Osho's vision. So what does it mean for you to carry on Osho's vision? And what would be your advice for people like myself, for example, who aim to carry on Osho's vision?
You know, it's interesting when you say that. I don't do that consciously. I don't say, right, now I'm going to carry Osho's vision. Many years ago, he used to say, you know, you're one of my horses. But I don't feel I am anymore, or if I am, I'm a very old horse. I live Osho's vision. I try to live Osho's vision, and that's what I bring. I don't have an idea now I want to, you know, carry Osho's vision. I don't feel like I'm a missionary in any way. I don't, that's not my work. But because I'm so steeped in Osho, because he is so alive in me, that's what I bring wherever I go. That's what I am. It's not like Osho's outside. It's inside. So, no, I'm actually not trying to spread Osho's vision. I think maybe in the early years I was more on that proselytizing, or however you want to say it. I want to keep Osho alive in me, and therefore it transmits. Like, say I'm doing a group right now. What I will do is I will use Osho quotes. I will feel Osho's teaching in me and then express it in my own way. But I'm not saying to everyone, yes, come on the bandwagon. We're all going to be Osho disciples. I don't do that anymore, and I don't think it's needed. I have more trust. I really still feel that people who need to find Osho, they will find Osho. They will find him somehow, either through a meditation, through a book, through a podcast, through going on the internet, where Osho has a wonderful presence. Osho still attracts people. And I think after that TV show, a lot more people suddenly got switched on. And a lot more people, like my young nephews, you know, who were not even born at the time, was, oh, you were there. Tell me about it. People want to know. Then, of course, I'm happy to, really more than happy to talk about it. My family never, ever asked me about Osho. They never used my Osho name. They were actually, I think, a little ashamed of me. But then when the film came out, suddenly they were so proud that their sister was there. And so then finally, after 30 years, we could talk about it. So yes, Osho lives in me, and that's what I carry, rather than I decide I want to do Osho's work. I don't know if that makes any sense.
100%, and somehow it's how I feel that I'm traveling towards to that. Basically, if I understand what you're saying, it's just, you know, be yourself, imbibe Osho, express it the way you are. Then, you know, and then what happens, happens. You know, there is not this idea of going around and trying to do something.
No, no.
But it's a love affair. You know, Osho always said that. Being with Osho is a love affair. So what gets transmitted is love. What gets transmitted is truth. What gets transmitted is silence. This is what gets transmitted. And this is what reaches people. And then they go, well, what is that flower? What is that I'm smelling? Oh, it's Osho.
Beautiful. And then you mentioned before about the fact that you see in your work so many people interested in Osho. So I think you travel quite a lot. You have so many workshops everywhere. So can you give us a sense of what's happening with people around the world in terms of Osho?
I would put it more broadly. I would say people are more and more drawn to something essential. They're drawn to meditation. They realize their lives don't work in the normal way. So they come because they want something that opens them, that allows them to find their heart, that allows them to discover their aliveness, that allows them to come out of conditioning. That opens them, because people who are conditioned, people who are afraid, people who are conventional, you know, Osho was probably the most unconventional person that ever existed. But as people want to open up, and in the groups they open up, then the space of Osho becomes available. And I always use Osho quotes. I use music that is from the Osho world. It gets transmitted. It gets transmitted in indirect ways. And then people can choose. Then people come to me and they say, I want to know more about Osho. I want to feel Osho more. Well, what do I do? And what's beautiful is there's always somewhere where they can go and find an Osho meditation, whether they find it online or they go to one of the Osho centers. Osho is accessible. You know, they go to Pune, they go where Osho is. And then the field becomes more alive. So people are attracted. And it's a lot of younger people, actually. They're really attracted to the meditations. You know, the meditations are timeless. That's the most amazing thing, that they are absolutely timeless. The music and the Kundalini is as alive for me today as it was 40 years ago. So people are attracted because they are searching.
Do you think they're searching, or do they come because they have some personal issues and they want to solve, or there is something deeper that, you know, there is this existential urge to, you know, it's more like a soul need?
I think it's both. I think, look, Osho always said people are a quest. People are always searching because everybody knows that the life they're living is not the real life. Everybody somewhere knows that. And I think there's always people who are searching. And sometimes it manifests because there's a crisis, there's a death, there's a loss, there's a relationship, something that happens that breaks their normal way of operating or makes them have to feel something that they never wanted to feel. And, you know, it's often a crisis that will open somebody and bring them to therapy and then bring them to Osho. And sometimes it's people are just hungry. They're thirsty. They're looking for life. They're looking for meditation. They know that there's more than what's offered to them. And, you know, people come to Osho from all kinds of things. This was what was so amazing. He attracted people from all over the world. But basically, I think what people were attracted to was two things, was the love, the openness, and the meditation, the silence. I think that's ultimately what pulls people, and the longing for transformation. I don't think that people are now, you know, in my day, we used to talk a lot about enlightenment. I wanted to get awakened. I wanted to become enlightened. There was a spiritual ambition. I don't know how much that's alive. I think people are more desperate because life is more isolated. It's more digital. There's less intimacy. People are more alone. And so there is a longing for community, actually. But there's also a longing for an inner life, a freedom, an inner freedom. And that is still offered. That is still available from Osho, from wherever they find Osho, a book, a tape, a CD, a discourse on YouTube. People can access Osho. That's really great.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it kind of resonates. I mean, it's a little bit my story. I had this, that's why I asked the question. You know, I came to Osho for both. I had obviously issues, which I still have, of course, as a human being. But at the same time, I had something like more existential. And that's what really caught me from Osho. That was the only one that I felt like, okay, he has got an answer. That then wasn't an answer.
Yes.
It's not an answer, but it catches you.
It certainly catches you, and he offers a direction. He gives people guidance. You know, he tells you, there's so many questions where he really guides seekers. He really gives you answers, but he doesn't only answer your question, he answers you, the questioner.
It's incredible how he can be so individual and universal at the same time. I don't
know
how he can do it.
Exactly. That's exactly right, and I think that's the appeal. You know, sometimes I reread the Darshan diaries, and I mean, what he gave to people was just incredible. So much intimate, so much personal advice and insights. I mean, the insights were just phenomenal. And there is so much richness to Osho. People can dial in from wherever they need to for whatever they need to. It is really a universal appeal.
So talking a little bit about your work, of course, now I guess you are probably at home in a lockdown like most of the world.
But I'm still really working.
Right. So talk us through your latest projects and what would you normally do if you were not locked at home?
Well, obviously, I would be traveling. And that was something I've been doing for many, many years. But I actually have to admit that as I was getting older, I was finding it more difficult. Not the work. I love the work. I feel always young and fresh in the work. But being on the road, being alone on the road, that was starting to feel more and more painful to me, actually. So I'm really enjoying the stay at home, and I'm doing work with women. I'm doing my individual work. I'm working on all different projects because now we have to move the work online. So, no, I haven't stopped working at all. And it's really one of the things that I'm really working on now is Osho's Tantra work, his Tantra vision. I haven't liked the word Tantra for a long time because I don't always like what I see goes on in the world of Tantra. Not so much Osho Tantra, but generally Tantra. It seems to be a place where the real message of Tantra as a awakening, as transformation, as realization has been turned into something just about sex, and that's not something I'm particularly interested in. But I do believe that the real message of acceptance, of allowing, of becoming natural, of trusting yourself, of opening your heart and allowing yourself to be simply natural and alive, that has a tremendous amount of value, and people are hungry for it.
Where people can find you if they want to know more about your work or get in touch with you?
Well, there's my website, which I'm anyway going to change because now I'm not traveling, but I'm still accessible on my website, and how to reach me is available. And I really still love to connect with people and share whatever I am exploring for myself. You know, part of the work with Osho is it's always a work on yourself. This idea that we do it for other people, it's only partly true. We do it for ourselves. Sometimes we do it for ourselves narcissistically, which is not always that good because, you know, we get a lot of juice from people. That's one side of it. But basically, if we are not growing in our work and we are not learning something, we are not doing the work. So I find the work is a place of growth for me and of pleasure, and where I can also deepen in my meditation and in my inner search. This I love. So it's not work. You know, he always used to say on the ranch, work is worship. Work is meditation. Work is work on yourself. And that I love, and I'm grateful to him for that. You know, there are therapists who really just do the work. You know, they work with people and it's work. It isn't for me. Sometimes, yes, it feels like work, but essentially it's a way that we as therapists, and I'm sure the others feel the same, we grow through our work. We learn through our work. We are given so much richness from the people who come to us, as well as what we give to them. It's a beautiful exchange.
It's very, very beautiful and honest, and I love it. So we are heading towards the end, and I've got three final questions. But before that, is there anything else we haven't covered and you would like to add?
I think, you know, it's something to do with the heart and something to do with love. I really feel that Osho was a love affair, and that what really Osho gave us was meditation, not as a strict discipline, but meditation as opening your heart, as relaxation, as letting yourself just be. And that I feel is so valuable. And I mean, that's what I carry. It's really about love. It's about the heart. It's about trust. And these are timeless values. And I live them. I try to live them. I'm very aware when I lose it. But one thing I know with Osho, you can always come back. You can fall off. You can get back up.
That is so beautiful. And yeah, I fell off many times.
But yeah, who didn't? I mean, we fell off in work. We fell off in all our narcissistic stuff. We fell off in relationships. We fell off in distractions, but we always can come back. That's the beautiful thing. And Osho's always there for us, really. I really know that. I really feel that.
Okay, so three final questions. What's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
Well, I wish I could tell you that I got up and I meditated for an hour, but I can't. My morning is a cup of tea and straight to the internet. And then some little stretching or some exercise. And actually, it differs. You know, I work in the morning, so I always like to meditate for 15 minutes before I talk to anyone. That's very important for me, that I settle myself, that I find a quiet space, that I have receptivity. So before I work, I always do a little meditation, or I listen to Osho, or I'm just silent. But I'm not a big hour in the morning meditator. I meditate more in the evening. When the work is done in the afternoon, then I can do some yoga or a walk, or then I meditate. But I'm not a morning meditator. I work in the morning. So cup of tea and straight to the internet. That's my meditation. Look at the news.
Okay, no problem.
I'm a bit ashamed about that. It should be more like, oh, I get up at 6 and I sit on my meditation cushion for an hour. No, I simply do not. I go straight to the news, check my emails, look at Facebook, and then some silence.
Whatever works for you.
It works for me, but I am an evening meditator. That must I not say. I listen to Osho, I listen to talks. There's so much wonderful stuff on the internet now, so much beautiful guidance and support for meditation. And I listen to a lot of people. I would not say I only follow Osho. I get my inspiration from many, many people, but Osho is my seed master. He's my root guru.
So the second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
Wow, you know, it changes. Sometimes I love Latihan. It really depends on my mood. Sometimes I love Kundalini. That I would say is my baseline. Sometimes I love Nada Brahma, and sometimes I just sit. I don't do anything. I just sit. So there's no one thing that I do. I flow. It depends on my mood, and it depends on what I'm working with or what I'm working on. So it really depends. Really depends. I cannot say there's anything static. It's just a flow. Sometimes I just like to listen to Osho, really. Right now I'm working through all the Tantra discourses and also the Secret of Secrets. I mean, the amount of brilliance is simply overwhelming.
Okay, so the last question is, you lead the Osho experiment. You are one of the pioneers in this movement of creating the new man, Zorba the Buddha. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2020?
You know, I think it's very simple. It's to live your life with responsibility. It's to be living a life of integrity, that you treat yourself well, that you treat others well, that you, it's really about simplicity, about honesty, about respect and responsibility. I mean, Osho's in me. There's nothing I have to do for that. That's already there. I just try to live consciously. I try to eat consciously. I try to relate consciously. I try to be present and compassionate and respectful of my clients. I try to be respectful of the environment. It's simple. It's just living a life of simplicity and responsibility. It's nothing fancy. I don't say I'm trying to get enlightened anymore. I don't feel even I am. I don't even know what that word anymore would mean. So that was my original, I want to get enlightened. I have no idea. I just like to go day by day and deal with what comes up and face myself. That's really all I can say. I wish I could make it more elaborate and romantic, but it just isn't.
You might be the one who gets a ladder the first because of...
Who knows? And you know, I've given it up. If I just knew Osho this lifetime, I'm just immensely grateful for what I had. Immensely grateful. That's all I can say. I feel immensely, immensely blessed to have known Osho in those days when we could have an intimate connection with him in the body, in the Sangha. I'm immensely grateful. I feel like this lifetime was blessed by Osho.
Yeah, and I feel like I miss that, of course, but at the same time, I'm very, very grateful and I'm so blessed that I can talk to you and all the other sannyasins who have been with Osho, and you carry Osho energy so vividly, so it's so strong, and it's amazing. So I'm very, very grateful.
Oh, good, Swaram. Thank you. And I just listened to something this morning where he talks about Buddha coming back as Maitreya. And he said, you know, my greatest secret was I really just wanted to be your friend. I really didn't want to do the whole master thing, which was kind of shocking to me, really. And I have to sit with that. But, you know, I'm just in so many ways just so grateful for the experiment that we lived with Osho, all of it, even the parts that were difficult and painful, like when the ranch ended, that was really a heartbreak for me. I was really thinking this will go on forever. I was all in. I wanted this experiment for my whole life in the Sangha. You know, Osho for me was also the Sangha. So when we don't have that physical Sangha, you know, that's been difficult. But Osho is, his energy, his message, his vibration will always be present.
Yeah, and I feel like now the Sangha is perhaps even more important.
I think it is. Yeah, that's really true. Well, Swaram, you've made me think. You've actually challenged me with these questions. They're good.
That's my job.
You did good. You made me work.
Well, so thank you for that. It's been a real pleasure chatting with you. I really felt a deep connection, even though we know each other 1 hour. But yes. It's been amazing. Thank you so much.
And yes, you're so welcome. You're so welcome. Thank you, Swara. Much love to you guys. And please stay safe.
And you too. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Love Osho podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit loveosho.com for new episodes, blogs, and much more.